This week's Chronicle was recorded live and unedited at Dr. Wingrove's office. He's a local chiropractor and has Desert Hills Chiropractic. This will be a two-parter. Please enjoy. Actually, we're not calling it a podcast, we're calling it a chronicle, right? That's what we're...
Yeah.
April and I are very fortunate to be in Wingate?
Wingrove.
Wingrove.
Good luck
with
that. Yeah.
Dr. Wingrove's office, who is, I am proud to say, my chiropractor, and has kind of opened
my eyes. I'm honored to have you in the clinic 100%.
Well, listen, I want to find out a little bit of history about you, and I'll have April jump in when she has questions. Have you been to a chiropractor, April?
I have, yes.
And what do you think?
So I actually see an Alice chiropractor.
Okay, yeah.
So I kind of wanted to ask a few questions because I know some traditional chiropractors have different opinions on that.
There's a ton of different opinions. Absolutely. There's the technique, chiropractic technique, spreads across a wide area. There's a lot of different techniques, a lot of different kinds of practitioners, upper cervical specific. You know, one of the things that I really have always loved about chiropractic is the chiropractic profession is a quick adopter of new therapies and new technologies. Whatever we do does not have as much risk as a surgery. We're not doing implants. We're not giving medications with a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. So it's just generally less risky for the patient. And we get to be a little bit more experimental, which means we can adopt therapies and technologies a little bit quicker than other professions. There's fantastic research going on in the medical field that will not make it to the patient for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's really, that you've got to prove and prove and prove, and then you've got to do small cohort testing on new therapies, and then you have to let those do their thing for 20 years before you really know how your population is going to respond to a new therapy. Let's say if you're doing a new implant. So there's a really, it's really, really slow to adopt something new in pretty much all medical field except chiropractic care. Like, we can pick stuff up like super fast. And because of that, you end up with a doc that hits a problem for a certain patient, and they have this like the little mini breakthrough. Like, I figured out for this particular patient, this therapy is wonderful. And it's something that nobody else is doing. And because it's so new and it helps so much for that specific condition, you can build a whole practice around it. And that kind of thing happens over and over in chiropractic. And so you have this spreading of specialty in the chiropractic community. And that's where that kind of thing happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, well, listen, I want to go a lot deeper into what she's just asked you. And plus, I also want, before we do that, I want to digress just a little bit. Okay? I want to find out where you're from originally. Where were you born?
Amarillo, Texas. Yeah, I grew up in Amarillo.
Really?
Yeah. What brings you here?
I get that question like many times a day.
Well, I'll tell you what brought him here. The wind brought him here.
The wind? Yeah.
He blew him.
Like,
no, it's a good story. So I was working at a great clinic in Texas. I wanted to buy in. Buying in was not an option for me. I'm getting old, right? I'm getting old. So I wanted to have something that I was able to continue to develop and pass along to a future younger doctor, and then get to step back and semi-retire and be the guy that kind of pops into the clinic a couple of days a week. You know, I would like to get there someday. But that wasn't an option. So we were kind of looking at options. And we had come up this way. We vacation up here. We like to go to Durango. We love the area. And we were up in here, and a friend of mine said, hey, come work for me, and I want you to buy my clinic. I'm about to retire. And we 100% turned him down immediately.
Not only no, but hell no.
I said, no, no way. But my wife and I talked about it on the drive home. And we talked about it for a month or so afterwards, and we thought, you know, we really like the area. It'd be fun to live there. We thought it was pretty sketchy about whether or not we could see through the purchase of another clinic. If you've built a business and you put 35 years into it, it's hard to let go.
Absolutely.
And it's a common story. So we knew that was a big risk, and that it may not work out. And it did it, and that was fine. We were prepared for that. We were prepared to come and just kind of do our own thing. It was a good time for us to move and a good time for the kids, and yeah, it just kind of worked out.
What got you into chiropractic?
I got hurt.
Is it called chiropractic?
Chiropractic. I got hurt. I got hurt on a summer job doing a lift. You've seen the big party inflatable bouncers?
Mm-hmm.
Those monsters? Those things are heavy. And I was on a job. We delivered them in the morning. All over town, and we'd set them up, and then we would collect them in the evenings and roll them up, put them away, and carry them back to the warehouse. And I had a job where I had one of the larger ones. It was like an obstacle course. They weigh about 500 pounds. And all of my help had gone home for the day. I was the only one left, and I had to put it away by myself and get it into the back of a truck.
Uh-oh.
And get it into the back of a truck was when I got hurt. Yeah.
Oh.
You sound like the same kind of guy I am.
You're gonna tackle
it no matter what.
100% just destroyed a disc in my low back doing that. It hurt right away. I thought I could kind of shake it off, young man that I was, and I did not. And so I had already made the decision, if I ever really hurt my back, and that's a fun story, I'll tell you in a minute. If I'd ever really hurt my back, I would get it taken care of quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I got hurt, I thought, I need to go see a chiropractor. I need to go get some help. And I went and saw a great doctor in Texas, Dr. Hand.
Actually. Oh,
yeah, I know, right? Yeah,
what a great name.
Great name for a chiropractor.
Absolutely.
But it took about a year and a half before I was asymptomatic and kind of feeling 100%. And that still bothers me on and off, but it's really well managed. And usually only if I do something really dumb. At home.
You don't do that, do you?
I do it all the time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm not any better than anybody else. I work hard and play hard, and it's a lot of fun. I had a buddy, and he was older than me. He was about 30 years older than I was at the time, in his 60s then probably, and he had some nerve pain in his leg, and for like 7 years. And he refused to do anything about it. And it slowly got worse and worse and worse until he lost motor control of the leg. The leg was paralyzed.
I know this feeling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the leg was paralyzed. He was dragging his foot across the floor. And he finally went and had emergency surgery because he was starting to lose bladder control.
Okay.
So, it became an emergency. Never fully recovered. He had foot problems for years and years after that. And he recovered with me at my house, and while I was helping him off the toilet and helping him pull his pants up, I thought, if I hurt my back, I'm not going to wait 7 years.
No kidding.
Yeah, so that choice happened then, and then I got hurt, and then I ended up at a chiropractor's office. Yeah. So that's that story. That's how
I... Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I was in college. I was almost finished with my business degree, and I postponed taking my last class... Because if I had gotten my degree, I would have been ineligible for scholarships and grants. So I paused my degree plan, just shelved it, and I went back and I took 3 years of pre-med. And then I went back and finished my one class and got my degree, and then I went to grad school.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if you get the scholarships, why not do it?
That's
that
exactly
way? That
right. Yes. Yeah. I played that as smart as I could because student loans are no joke. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I am just totally fascinated. I'm going to tell you that you're the first chiropractor that I've actually been to. I lived next door to a chiropractor when I lived in Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
And he and I were good friends. We built a fence between our homes because that's how good friends we were. We didn't want to see each other.
That's right.
It's like a lovely neighbor relationship. Yeah.
No, we decided we wanted a nice wood fence. But I became good friends with him, and he used to, and you know, and that was back when I was in my 30s, and I was a young executive, and I, you know, he would not beg. But he would like, why don't you come in the office? You know, why don't you come in? And I'd just laugh at him. I'd be like, yeah, I don't believe in that.
I think your intuition was right. You're like, no, I know it wasn't begging. No, it was begging.
Yeah.
It was begging.
Well, I know that, and your doctorate, what is your doctorate of? What is it? It's DC at the end of your
doctor
name.
Doctor of Chiropractic.
Doctor of Chiropractic. Yeah. So it's just that simple.
Yep.
But you do have some medical with that too, so right?
It's required, right?
There's a lot of overlap with what you would consider a medical doctor education. The total amount of hours, like the amount of work, is about the same. Internship, very different between an MD and a chiropractor. Internship, quite different. Where it divulges, the points of diversion. An MD will spend, I don't remember, lots and lots of hours studying pharmacology.
Sure.
Lots and lots. We take like 10 hours of pharmacology, like almost nothing. And we take hundreds of hours of anatomy and physiology. Just hundreds and hundreds.
Well, that
makes
sense.
Medical doctors don't take that many hours. Yeah. So that's where they kind of diverge.
Unless they specialize in something. Or if they're specializing in something, they'll be a little deeper.
If they graduated and came back and specialized in, you know, functional movement or as an internist, then yeah, they're going to have some more hours in that.
See, this to me is the interesting part of this. This is why I wish that I had paid attention to that chiropractor that I knew in Louisiana and actually gone then. My experience with you has been, first of all, I trust you immensely, and I think we've even talked about, you know, I've told you when I went to certain things, what was transpiring, because you immediately with me, by the second visit, when I explained my symptoms to you, you said, we better get you in for some x-rays.
Yeah, we got to check out what's going on. Yeah, I don't like those symptoms. Exactly. Yeah.
My daughter-in-law had a reverse effect.
She had a horrible experience.
So what happened with your daughter-in-law?
She had a chiropractor that kept her coming back, and to his benefit, I think his heart was in the right place, trying to help her, but she had to have back surgery, and when she finally broke down and got the x-rays to get that done, the doctor told her that, man, you should have been here a year ago.
They put it off. They put it off, yeah.
My second visit with Dr. Ken, he said, let's get, and he was extremely concerned, and I appreciate that. And I felt like he had my best interest at heart and not just trying to keep me coming back.
Get a quick visit, keep you coming back.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a common complaint against chiropractors, and that did not come from nowhere.
Right.
Right? That's a legitimate concern. One of my favorite chiropractor jokes is, how many chiropractors does it take to change a light bulb? One, but it takes 10 visits.
Okay.
Well,
dad joke and a chiropractor joke. I like it.
My daughter-in-law did say to me, too. She's like, well, I'm going to visit him when next time we come through town. but I don't know. I just feel like you're definitely, your heart is in the right place. I think you have the human element, and I think that's what's most important. And all doctors, I think, at some point lose that human element because they see so many of the same thing. And that's what it was with Dr. Gamay and my spine specialist.
Yeah.
And
But
you did put my mind at ease with him.
Just chill out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want him to be excited.
Yeah. That's the first thing you said was, you should be glad he's not excited. Because then you may be in trouble.
Your surgeon.
Oh.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the guy that the doctor gets home to his family in the evening and goes, guess what I got to see today?
Yeah,
no.
That's a wonderful one.
I will tell you, when I went in for the injections, he kidded with me. And at first, it was kind of like, it was a little off base, I thought, but I think he, because of my personality, and he knew, and you know, he had me laughing and put me at ease. So, and I thought, this guy's all right. I can handle this guy.
That's really good, because he's feeling like it's a little safer to have a relationship rather than trying to be kind of a health coach.
Yeah.
You have to be a little more tentative, step a little easier when you're first meeting a patient. And we talk about this all the time in the clinic, in the staff. Nobody comes in here because they're having a good day.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the guy that they're grumpy as hell.
Yeah, same thing. It's like if you take your car into the mechanic, it's the same kind of feeling. You're just like sweating bullets about, oh my gosh, what are they gonna find? You know, and then you get the phone call, and here we go. Now we gotta name the problem, and we gotta deal with it. And that's the beginning experience with a doctor and a patient. That's the first couple of days. So you gotta navigate that carefully. Yeah, and you might not know if you can throw in a little levity and lighten the room right off in the beginning.
Right. Well, everybody's personalities are different.
Yeah, you can't come across as goofy. Even though you're personally not concerned about this at all. You're like, oh, this is no sweat. We got this.
Now, see, if he had said that at first, I'd have felt great. No sweat. We got it.
But not everybody does. So as a young doc, I've made that comment, this is no sweat. We got this. And the immediate reaction is you're not taking me seriously.
Yeah.
You really have to get somebody before you can go a little off the rail, play a little jazz, and try to build a relationship that doesn't just have to do with what hurts.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the tools and stuff that you use, because I feel like you've got a sledgehammer back there. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but
oh, I've heard of this. He compared it to the Iron Throne.
I love my tools. So the tools in my clinic are, and when I adopt a new tool in the clinic, it is mostly focused on how much longer can I keep doing this job? And what tool can I adopt so that it's a little bit easier on my body?
Yeah.
If you imagine, you know, just for you, the amount of stretching we're doing or tissue work, you know, I feel the same thing you feel.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's just as hard.
I haven't heard you groan yet.
Because we do that all in the background. Yeah.
It would probably make me a little nervous if you're groaning.
You can't see how red my face is. But yeah, it's hard on the body. You know, chiropractic is a really, really physical profession. And typically, as doctors age, they adopt more and more tooling or easier and easier techniques. But at the same time, you're leaving a lot of benefit for the patient behind. The lighter techniques are, and the gentler techniques, they're perfect for fewer and fewer people.
Most
people that are generally healthy, they need some physicality to the treatment. Not necessarily the adjusting, but if you're working on tissues, muscles, ligaments, things like that, you need to be able to work deeply. If you're doing stretching, you need to be pretty aggressive most of the time.
All right, let's stop right there for a second, because I kind of passed over that, but you it's not just about the back. You deal with the muscle groups, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I want to hear about this. So when I've gone to a chiropractor, I haven't had tissue work done. So,
right.
So I'm very intrigued. I want to hear
that's,
more about
that's
that.
That's fairly atypical. So in my head, most of the problems with the spine do not originate in the spine.
Okay.
So if I look at my worst spinal patients, that have not had a spinal injury, like a direct spinal injury, like an auto accident, a fall, a horse, a trampoline, you know, some direct injury cause.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, as time passes, they're just losing function, they're losing mobility, they're increasing in pain. If I look at those patients, and there's a lot of that patient, they lose mobility and they lose flexibility in their hips and shoulders first. And then they begin to have back and spine pain secondarily. So we do a lot of hip and shoulder work, a lot of extremity work. And I'm thinking about like dental hygienists, anybody that sits at a desk, anybody that has to drive. Yeah.
Well, I know this. I know that my physical therapist is helping me strengthen my muscles and my core to help support the spine.
Sure.
And the stretches and exercises that she's having me do, truly, I can tell they help. I still don't feel quite as strong or stable on my feet.
Right.
But I know that those are helping. And she talks about taking the pressure off the spine by using the muscle groups. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too.
Yeah. So, you know, all the like major hip movers will come up, and all of the biggest muscles of the pelvic bowl and the hip, they interact with the low back, and then they interact all the way into the neck and shoulder. Our bodies are one unit together, and a lot of people think of the body as individual parts, and that's another area where there's a divergence between a medical doctor and a chiropractor. A chiropractor sees the body as one thing, and emotionally and spiritually and physically one thing. You know, how mental health affects physical health, like big time, hugely.
Oh my God, absolutely.
Yeah, and everybody knows that, right? That's everyone's deep intuition. And when you, if you go into the ER, that part of you is not addressed.
That is
like
correct.
Why? How did we pair that off all of a sudden in this one specific time?
Right here, take some meds and put a Band-Aid on it versus addressing what's going on.
I had, and I'll tell vague stories, so I'm not identifying anybody. I had a patient that was a chronic smoker, and it was obvious they were having increasing tissue damage from smoking. Smoking does lots and lots of tissue damage, not just to the lungs, and they wanted to stop smoking. And I thought, well, this is a good thing. I'm going to encourage this. I'm going to go along with this. Right? Right? Who wouldn't?
Right?
And we got them to quit smoking, and their stress level went up so quickly, so much after stopping smoking, that they got cancer quickly after that.
Oh.
So
stress can lead to cancer?
Stress 100% can lead to cancer. Stress is worse on your body than smoking. So, you know, that kind of had to, that made me take a step back. And this person was obviously taking care of themselves. This was the best stress management they had.
Was smoking.
Huh. That was the healthiest stress management that they personally could achieve.
You know what? I can relate to that.
Thank you.
Isn't that a pickle? That's a pickle. So can we try to do good and make people worse? Yes, we can. All the time. It happens. And as you get unhealthier in life, you become more and more fragile to being overtreated. The sicker you are, the easier it is to go too far with treatment, and any kind of treatment. It is. The sicker you are, the easier it is for a healthy diet to push you over the edge. And I've seen that too. And those are weird things to have to deal with, because we don't want that to be the case. No. We don't want to take someone who is very, very sick and clean up their diet and they get sicker. Nobody wants that, but it does happen. And so you have to be super thoughtful about care and beginning care. The same way with beginning a relationship with a patient, you have to know where to start.
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about how cleaning up your diet could cause more problems. Is that because some of those people use food as like a stress relief, and so then
that
they don't know how to compensate?
That would be part of it.
Or what do you mean by
and
that?
And then making a drastic dietary change is also its own stress.
Okay.
See, April, I told you I can't do that.
You can't.
So you guys want to go get tacos?
So, you know, what do we use our mental and emotional energy on? And mostly it is the things we are negotiating with ourselves to get done. You got to get up and get the laundry done today. You got to get up and get the car in and get the oil changed. We're mostly using our mental and emotional energy negotiating with ourselves on what we're trying to force ourselves to do. And to throw in a diet where this is not about a habit. So habits are so much easier to make changes with.
Mm-hmm.
But to force yourself to make a big lifestyle change immediately takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I think everybody can see that. I've got to learn a new way to cook. I've got to use a lot of willpower. I'm just using tons of willpower because now I'm over at my friend's house who knows me, who knows my favorite food and made it for me because we're playing cards tonight.
Right.
And so now I've got willpower for myself, and then I don't want to damage my relationship with my buddy who made me this great meal. There's a lot of stuff going on to deal with making a drastic change. And so the body handles habits much better than willpower. Willpower is pretty short term. It's pretty tough to manage long term. Because you only have so much energy to throw at something.
You know, I years ago, I was smoking three pack. I was an executive with Sears, smoking three packs of cigarettes a day.
Right.
And I was only about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 pounds overweight,
yeah,
max.
Yeah.
So I went and visited the doctor, and he said, man, I need you to quit smoking. I need you to lose some weight.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, but don't do them both at the same time.
Don't do them both at the same time.
Right.
So I threw the, I went.
Yeah.
And threw the cigarettes in the trash, quit cold turkey, and since I smoke a cigar now and then, but not an inhale kind of deal, just
right.
But I gained 150 pounds.
Yeah, are you healthier after that?
No.
That's questionable.
See, yeah, that's exactly right. And you're talking about making a habit versus
willpower.
Willpower.
Yeah.
I have no willpower. So let's talk about how, in your mind, how do you make it a habit? Is it just daily fortitude to get after it, or
well, there now you're back to willpower. I need my willpower to make some habits.
Yeah,
you have to trick yourself. You have to trick yourself. If a lot of people say, "Doc, man, I was feeling really good when you put me on B12, but I just can't remember to take it." I'm like, "Oh, okay, sure." Lots of people can't remember to take something, even though that is a really easy thing to do comparatively to all the things you can do to make yourself healthier. Right? Yes, you put a B12 tab under your tongue. Not that hard.
Right.
But I can't remember to do it. Can't get it done. And I'm like, that's no problem. What do you do first thing in the morning? Well, I get up and brush my teeth. Just put it right by your toothbrush.
See, I don't... You recommended calcium... Or no, magnesium.
Magnesium.
And I think it was 1,000 milligrams and vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams. Or maybe it was 2,000 milligrams.
Probably a little higher on the C than the mag. Yeah.
A day. And I don't have any problem getting that done.
Right.
I've been getting it done.
But were you already taking something?
That's where I was going to go. I have blood pressure medicine that I take on a regular basis.
Yeah. So I just added it to that.
Right. And it was easy to do that.
That's called habit stacking, and the mind accepts that quite well. All you're doing is adding another lyric onto the end of a song you already know.
I like it.
I like that.
Yeah, that's called habit stacking. You know, I know for me, a couple of years ago, and I've been making changes really slowly for my own personal health, but I was sitting there thinking, this is a good question, and it's hard to think about. You have to drum up some guts. What is just a really stupid thing you do every day that's going to wreck you in 5 years?
Oh, man.
I know, right?
What isn't there?
Okay, so I'll go first. I drink too much caffeine. I like it. It makes my brain happy.
Like,
I have four kids.
You can predict your own future a little bit if you just think, if I keep doing that every day for five more years, where am I going to end up? You can think of it really quickly. Just who wants to? I stop by fast food every morning on the way to the clinic. And I was like, that's a horrible meal for me. I should nix that. So that was one change I made. And so I started doing some meal prep. I had some help with meal prep. And so we just changed that one thing. Yeah, super simple. Super requires zero willpower on my end because the meal prep is just as convenient for me as the fast food trip. And then I get that done. I let that habit settle in, and I'm like, okay, I'm cool with this. This just feels normal to me now. Zero willpower. And then I'm like, what's the next thing?
Right.
What's the next step?
Well, don't they say that it takes about 21 days until an action becomes a habit?
At least 21 days.
Something like that, yeah.
I feel like it's got to be longer.
Yeah, when you're 65, you've been doing it.
Perspectively, 50 years. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little longer.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, listen, before we get completely away from your chiropractic office, because there are some tools here that
I still want to hear about the tools. I also want to talk about the hips.
I have made some fun of on Facebook. I've kind of made light of, but they make me feel, or the one particular one makes me feel so good when I leave that and you and I had the conversation about exactly what it did, but. One of the things that I do enjoy is the electric shock treatment.
Okay, interferential therapy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So what is that all about?
So chiropractic will often use. So we're not doing administration of chemicals. We can do topicals. Now some chiropractors, they're like 100% whatever they think is natural, like that, and that's all they'll stick to.
THC, that's natural, baby.
That's a different
podcast. That's a whole other podcast. All right, be sure and tune in next week for the remainder of this wonderful podcast from Dr. Kevin Wingrove of Desert Hills Chiropractic.